everybody. Welcome back to the Dual Screens Podcast. I am one of your hosts. This is Stephen Fontana. With me over there, he's Andy Asimakis. How you doing, buddy?
Hostesses.
I wasn't sure if the S at the end of hosts came out of my mouth. I thought I said it, but it didn't sound like I said it, so I added it again at the end for good measure. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great.
Yeah?
I'm feeling fantastic. It's going to be a fun one, I feel.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel I mean, if it high isn't, energy.
If it isn't,
I blame you.
Sucks for the listener. Joining us this week is Anthony Paul, the creator of our topic of today, outside of just actually Anthony's whole career in games, the creator of Joltzy, which is a, I'm going to just say it right here, one of the best puzzle games you're ever going to play, period. It's right up there. It's up there with the bests, and you'll all find out soon. Anthony, how the hell are you?
I'm doing great. And I want to get this out of the way first. Mm-hmm. We know each other. We're friends of good standing, I think. And
it's very presumptuous of you, Anthony. Very presumptuous of you.
There is absolutely no nepotism in this at all. And I know this because I've been trying to get you to play another game for like 8 months, and you won't even touch that crap. Like, it won't even get
oh, yeah, there were all. Two builds in that email.
There were two builds.
It didn't touch the second one.
If you felt that Tetris was difficult, you might like the other game more.
It's not about difficulty. It's about my brain and Tetris don't get along well.
But
though, once we get into it, this game I felt was a little bit more accessible than Tetris, but we'll get into
it. We'll get into that for sure.
That's a great conversation. But yeah, to put a pin on that, I showed you this one and it just, Steve, this one spoke to you for some reason. And I'm very grateful. I have a lot of gratitude that you expressed interest in it. It kind of pushed me and we'll get into it. But point being, just to let it out there, we have known each other for, I think, decades now. Close, almost multiple decades.
Yeah, we're approaching 20 years.
And there is not a demo I've sent you that had you say, I want you on the show until I showed you that. So
how many have you sent him over the years?
Enough.
Oh.
They weren't quite as polished for sure. Like they were larger, ambitious projects, but enough to know that Steve and I are not the kinds of people that have told each other unnecessarily kind things just to do it. Mm-hmm. That's not our relationship. And I think it's for the better. Like Steve's a person that will tell me if I smell bad when I walk in a room. And I think that's a good friend because
that's important. Yeah. You need to have
that's the that best kind life. Of friend, in my opinion.
So yeah, Anthony and I met in college. We did, he's been in game development for pretty much as long as I know you. I think that you were interning with the studio while you were in college or maybe like right after. But I do remember you always being in game development as long as I know you. So before we get into, Joltzy and all that stuff, why don't you talk a little bit about your experience in the industry and what led you to being at now very close to releasing an independently developed video game, which is something that a lot of people try to do and never can.
Yeah, well, so I say this not facetiously. I chose my career in World 1-1 of playing Super Mario Brothers. And there's a moment where you could go between the get the pipe and go down the shortcut or get the one-up mushroom. And that just kind of blew my mind. And so unlike just playing the game, I was always kind of analyzing them. I said to my mom, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make video games. She's kind of like, you might grow out of it. And I was stubborn enough to be like, nope, that's it. If you're going to even suggest no, that's it. That's what I'm sticking to. So fast forward was always, trying to work in the industry. And then, as you mentioned, I think it was my first industry job was interning and then being an assistant producer at THQ when they were working on the prequel to Homefront. This was Frontline's Fuel of War.
Holy shit.
Yeah,
I haven't heard about that IP in the longest ass time.
Yeah. And I started out, I did anything. I worked with my first boss was this guy, Drew Como, was really great dude. And I was helping him build IKEA desks at first. I nearly drilled my hand, a hole into my hand when doing it. I was the worst person for it, but I was like, I'm gonna do whatever it takes to get in this. Learned a bunch. I'm from New York. I'm currently near Boston now, but the Northeast isn't really known for AAA game development. So you do a bunch of things. I worked on a Gossip Girl Facebook game, for instance, and not and I and I have a lot of gratitude for that, but that's not that wasn't the dream growing up, So
Sounds like
very
my
recent.
dream. Work on the Gossip Girl game.
Well, yeah, and I got to write some lines as a Gossip Girl. I think I got some pretty good ones in there, but but
I don't even know. I can't picture your brain writing a line for Gossip Girl.
I borrowed a
But
lot from Eminem to pull it off.
oh, yeah, well that tracks. Yeah, that tracks.
So you end up in a lot of different places. They're not necessarily the thing that you want to do. I've been in design, programming, production, always building stuff on the side. So one of my last gigs was actually really cool. We were working on an arcade basketball game, and I was a big sports fan, big basketball fan growing up. Really fun game. I won't get into the details too much, but the CEO basically somehow put a stop to that project. The whole studio collapsed.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not going to, because I work in the industry, I'm not going to go into the story, although it's a story that's been told by a lot of people around me, but I'm going to do my best to distance myself from it. But long for story short, I'd always been working on these prototypes. They're always very ambitious. It's very difficult to complete a game and work at a game studio at the same time, just that mental energy. So I said to myself, I just want to get something out there I'm proud of, so that when the kid comes up to me or someone comes up to me and says, "What game have you worked on?" I could point to this and say, "This game right here, I'm proud of this." And I'd always been obsessed with Tetris as well. I never thought I could make anything in the stratosphere of the quality. Tetris is a game, because it's so abstract, there's like no tricks. You don't get to get away with anything. Like it's got to be a great game. I could get into the analysis of why that game works, but for many decades, I've thought about that and why it works. And so I had this one puzzle game that I've been working on, the one that Steve won't touch. and I was like, okay, I could, and that was surprising to me, because I always played around with designs in my head and thought, oh, this doesn't work, but I really am proud of that game and like it a lot. And then one day I was working on something for a client, really just a few months ago, and I was blocked on a task because the server was down. And I had this design in my head for Jolzi, and the conceptually it was top-down Tetris and a few other tweaks. And so I was like, all right, fuck it. I'm just gonna, oh, I don't know if we could use
You could
language here.
use all the
I'm not
language.
Well, yeah, all of
Bleepy bleep me.
Nah.
I was like, all right, let me prototype this thing. And I massaged that for a couple of days. I'm not an artist, but it's kind of like a singer with the vocal range, where I was like, okay, I think I know my range. I think I have something in mind for it artistically, which I won't say is fabulous by any means, but I think, it's competent enough that people have looked at it and go, oh, that looks good. And so I showed Steve, and Steve, you were praising this thing before you even touched it. I played it, and let me know if at some point this gets boring. What this one answer to one question.
This is why we do the show. It's
We're gonna
because
ask him like three questions the whole
there
show.
are always stories behind the creations that we all fall in love with that are the map the you would need a map quest circa 2003 to like follow the bouncing ball, and that's why we do the show. So it you're not boring, trust me.
All right, well, thank you. But so I played a prototype of the game, obviously. I played my own game, shocker. After like a couple of days, massaged a few things, and I played it for like an hour. And after I played it, it's like as a developer, you don't know, am I playing this a lot and analyzing it as a designer, or am I playing it and analyzing it as a player? So that was like, it was a bit difficult to segment those two things. So I take a shower, and 30 minutes later, I'm still thinking about this thing, like strategies and whatnot. And at that point, I'm thinking, I think I'm strategizing as a player more than I am as a game designer now. So like, okay, I think I have something. I give it to my brother. Now, Steve, you know this as well as I do. My brother and I are, we're not like warm people together too. He's not like, I can't wait to play your game. He's like, oh, okay, I'll play your game. He plays it for an hour. And it's that same thing as the Tetris effect where it's like, all right, I can only play one more. Okay, one more. Okay, one more. And just playing it, playing it, playing it. And he is like, Anthony, don't show this to anyone. This is really good. Like, just be careful, kind of thing. And then an hour later, he had the same experience as me. He texts me and he's like, I think I need to go back to the basement again and play the game. Like, I'm still thinking about it. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. That's cool. I think I have something. Maybe this isn't going to be for everybody, but there's going to be some people that have this experience where it's just like that Lay's potato chip, once you pop, you can't stop kind of thing. And
Wow,
so,
that was multiple brands. You combined multiple brands. I'm very proud of you.
Is it Lay's?
There was Pringles is the
Pringles
popping.
was in there, yeah.
Yeah, the Pringles popping, but the Lay's is
Well,
like you can't just
Lay's.
have
This is
one.
kind of a fusion game, so we're gonna
Yeah,
do
sure.
fusion
Yeah.
brands as well.
It's all on point, Steve.
I get it.
So Steve hadn't even played the game. He messages me. He's like, hey, when you get this thing up on Steam so we could do a podcast together? And I'm like, Steve, you haven't played this game yet. I think you need to play it because I think it's better than you might even know observing it. And you gave it very high praise, and I appreciate that. And that was enough to kind of push me into, okay, there's something about this game. And then even me, my standards for this is high. One of the reasons I play Tetris a lot is just because it's hard to have the time to play certain games. So I want something with the depth of a core game, but also that I don't feel like I have to make a huge commitment.
Right.
And so I now play this game, and it's kind of, and again, I think if you ask me, I think Tetris is the greatest game ever made. And I play this game, and it's sometimes hard for me to go back to Tetris. And I'm not saying it's better, but from my experience, it's like, okay, I think there's something here. So I'm talking about this game that nobody has any idea what I'm talking about.
Well, as you're speaking, I am going to be putting
Yes.
B-roll above us, so it's not playing right now, but
It's not.
it'll be superimposed in this box above our heads right now. So you are seeing it play. So why don't we go into what exactly the mechanics are? Ostensibly, you have yourself a grid, and each one of these pieces has the number one in the shape, in the squares that make up their shape. And if you overlay any of the numbers, they increase. And you can only clear a line if all of the numbers are the same. So if I'm not explaining that, well, please feel free to, jump in and tell people. But at first, when you're kind of going in there and you're playing, you don't really realize. You don't realize what you're doing right away, but you know what your goal is right away, which is very weird. It's a weird feeling to be like, no, I don't, okay, why is this number over here now? No. And then you start to like visualize where you're gonna put pieces before they come. And that was one of the things that I, one of the pointers I had for you was, the player feedback that the game gives you to kind of know what buttons do what, where you see, which piece is coming here next, how do I skip it? Like, just make things a little bit more clear. But once you did that, like, you made one tweak, and I think you sent it to me like later that day, I want to say. Once you made that tweak, it was like just a switch goes off in your brain, and you get addicted to making, number four lines, clearing them, and just it's really well done. It really is well done. But in your own words, how would you describe Jolsey?
Yeah, so conceptually, I came up with the idea of, like, walking across the Charles River. And you'll toy around with different ideas. And one idea, well, I was thinking about Tetris, as I often do. I was like, okay, I was thinking about some of the other 3D Tetris games. And it's hard to play those because the 3D sort of gets in the way of the seamless gameplay. But I thought, okay, what if I take advantage of the depth of the Z-axis, but visually keep it 2D so that it doesn't add confusion and complexity? And so what essentially you kind of end up with is it's like a bird's eye view, and theoretically the pieces are overlaying on top of each other. And then that increases the value. And then I allowed me to think about another game, which was 10-10, which I always wanted to kind of borrow mechanics from. And that's a grid which borrows heavily from Tetris. And so that gave me the language of clearing lines. And that's the other thing. The experience that I think you had, which is what I had at first, is it's not that the rules themselves are terribly confusing, but you developing a language for what's a good move and what's not a good move takes a little bit of time. And that's really cool because it's like Tetris is a solved game. So now you bring something with some of that intensity, and brain teaser, but it can be new again. And I think it is very fresh in that way, like surprisingly, even though it looks a lot like something that's Tetris, it because of the layering of the numbers, it changes the board a lot. So the way you're playing it is constantly evolving. It's not a static thing. And I say this as someone like a lot of these are happy accidents. Like I knew conceptually it would work, but to the degree it would work, I wasn't sure. So I'm kind of more analyzing it rather than crediting myself too much. It's like, okay, you build this thing, what is it that you have? And I'm thinking I'd like to know what you think, because there is this sort of bird's eye view that you're getting. I'm almost wondering if at least as an option, I do kind of like an isometric view where you kind of see the pieces landing. And that might be a little bit more challenging for some players, but it might make it visually clearer a bit what's happening or look cool. So yeah, there are still decisions that I need to make, and options, but hopefully I describe it's ironic, right? That it's really a simple game, and ironically, that's what makes it more complex to describe in its own way.
My initial reactions when I played this for the first time earlier today was the first thing I said was, can I somehow help fund this thing? Can I throw money at Anthony and just
No,
get it
no way. I don't want your money.
and get a
That's
piece
very
of the
kind.
and get a piece of the pot at the end of the day when the time
No.
comes? Can this be the first dual screens published endeavor? But aside from that initial thought, it's
Andy and I are not known friends of good standing, so
this is
that's
all listen
and
I this
I don't have any money, so it's very kind that Andy would say it's a dual screens endeavor when I would be giving
listen
precisely $0.
listen
But you
listen
we'll get you on.
Steven,
I
we can
mean,
work Rick can work something out, Steven.
because of my relationship with Anthony, I won't ask for a free key for this game. That is,
It's all good.
I will actually buy the game. But
No,
Andy,
I'm sorry, Andy had a
yeah, Andy
thought.
had a question, so I'd
Yes.
love to hear him
So another
finish.
question, it's more like, my initial impressions, like it's interesting because you look at it and the pieces are just Tetris pieces. So your brain thinks, oh, this is just Tetris. And my initial reaction is I have to build lines. That's my first go-to. But then I was like, this is such a small little space. And these pieces are huge. I'm like, how does this whole thing work? How do I really like get points on a consistent basis? Or how was this fun? Was my first thought. But then as I when I lost the first time after getting I think if you overlap more than on your fifth one, like you game over if you don't clear out the line or the piece. I was like, oh, this is not really about so much the lines. It's about, can I set up combinations of things and use parts of a piece? Like, I'll use one block from here, I'll stick it there to make that number go up to finish this line, and I'll bring this piece over here later. So it, like, it rejiggered my whole thinking of what Tetris is supposed to be, but it still felt familiar and comfortable.
Right.
And I was like, shit, I have a call with this guy. I gotta stop playing this thing. And it's got a really catchy little tune also, which helps.
Well, that's cool, because I scoured the internet for royalty-free
music.
The best I could find. I would love to talk about my fantasy for that music. If I may, I'll talk a bit about process, because, you know, the first thing you're trying to figure out is what's the right height, what's the right space. I thought the game needed to be constrained and tight, or else it would be too large. It wouldn't be challenging. But I thought that the value, I was thinking maybe the max value will be like 10 or something like that. I learned quickly that wasn't going to be the case. I tried it with 5 being the max value, and it just hurt my brain. It was just, it's already a game where the first time you play it, there's a lot of information. Mm. And then at 5, it becomes too much. So then I tried it at 3, and then it was like, okay, that's pretty good. Let me maybe give it a little bit more space. Can I do 4? Can I change some visuals? And I think that was the default best way to play. I might tool around with some things. I'm curious about what a 6x6 grid would be. Mm-hmm. I'm curious about making the pieces wrap around so that if you go off the edge, it'll show up on the other side. And it's figuring that balance between, I think because it's so constrained is part of what makes it interesting.
It does, 100%.
Yeah, and at the same time, I do want people to go for those 4x4 jolties, so figuring that out, because, you know, I watch a decent amount of competitive Tetris, and one of the compelling things is people going for those Tetrises every time and maximizing it. As far as the music, and I'm going to answer an unasked question, if that's okay,
with
you guys. So I'm not an artist by any means, but I did have like a vision for what I wanted to do visually and audio. And it was the inspirations for me, like, I like this idea of doing a modernized retro game, like it retro, but not pixelated.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so a lot of my inspirations were like to take Sonic Mania and visually update that, because they kind of intentionally went pixelated. Right. If you ever played Windjammers 2, I thought artistically that was really
cool. Yeah, that was a whole, like, they ditched the pixel art in that one.
But it still kept the same aesthetics of
the
art.
The soul is still there, what, like, was in the first one. But I see what you mean.
Guilty Gear did that in an amazing way. They're more of a 3D game. And then because I get to put my... It's my game, so I get to put my favorite stuff. The early 90s U2 concerts. There's a sound in like they're like industrial era, techno era, Octune Baby sound that actually is similar to me in the Sonic Mania soundtrack. And I was a fan of that guy before, you know, the guy who did it, T Lopes, I think is how he pronounces it. I would listen to his soundtrack like 10 years ago, like he did these remixes of Sonic songs. And so it's cool to me that he did Sonic Mania. So all of that kind of came together. And that was a little bit of an FU to my boss too. The guy who sunk the basketball game, we had this shared love of U2, and I could see he was trying to turn the basketball courts into U2 concerts, which is a really bad idea because it's a basketball game and you don't want this like flashing stuff in your face the whole time. But there was a little bit like, no, I'm going to make my game and I'm going to have like a U2 Zooropa inspired stage. That one still needs a lot of work. It looks like crap to me right now, but it'll get there. But yeah, like I think this kind of like modernized retro 90s look and sound, and it's within my range because most of what I'm doing is just, if you like the aesthetics of it, I'm just creating shapes and adding colors to them. That's really all I'm doing, and that's in my range.
I just realized I'm not insane enough for game design. I can't even draw a line straight or squiggly from you two to game design.
Oh, if you knew Anthony then, as long as I...
And then I,
yeah,
Anthony
you can draw
like,
any line to
he's
anything.
He's taken that, he's like, spite including it in his game.
Yeah. He's including... Yeah. So...
Yes, kids. This will be the first ever game with spite you two and Byron.
That sounds like a back box
you
feature, too. You know?
And if I'm really lucky, since all publicity is good publicity, I hope to get sued by Bono for doing it. I think that would really be...
Anthony, when many years ago, on one of our late nights, you were explaining to me a project you were working on that was going to revolutionize game development.
A strong okay. word, by the way.
You, I don't know if we're going to a joke version.
It's,
or...
No. Your idea, you were going to write an AI that is going to completely change how AI works in a game like a Zelda or whatever.
This is the most embarrassing thing you could do to me right now.
But listen, you had when you were explaining, you had a notebook, yay thick, full of the logic that was going to be programmed into this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, damn, Anthony's got like this. He's going to do it, man. He's going to be like, he's going to make like Skyrim level shit. So you say, I have it working. Okay. I didn't. This is the first time I can remember you showing me something you made, right? And I come over and your laptop could barely run. I think it was on Unity. I think you were using
definitely. It was definitely a desktop and this was pre-Unity.
It might have been. It might have been a desktop. You're right. Whatever. Loads it up. And there's this little guy and you had a ball on the thing and you just threw the ball somewhere else on the spherical map. And the AI that you programmed into this thing was no matter what, it's going to find where this ball is. So it going all over doing all these like tasks that aren't really tasks because you didn't actually like make tasks yet, but it was like climbing this mountain going towards the sun. And eventually it found it and it completed its goal. And that was your philosophy. And I said, oh, he's never making a game. Never mind. He's never making a game.
Well, okay. Let me tell you a few things about that.
What is the application?
That was an example of you
That's
not
my playing. First question.
Okay. So first of all, this is pre anybody having their hands on 3D game development tools. Right. There's no Unreal in anyone's hands. There's no Unity in anyone's hands. Not that I'm saying that, you know, because there's John Carmack of the world that actually knew what they were doing. Hmm. There was more going on to what you saw than what that was. Which
I know.
Was,
I know there was.
Okay. It wasn't just following a ball. It did have this underlying list of goals and it had to satisfy these goals of, you know, like hunger and desire and all kinds of wacky things. And conceptually, it's an interesting design. Was I completely naive and ignorant and allowed myself to be? Yes, because
hunger and desire. What the fuck?
Huh?
Hunger and desire.
Oh, it was like traits upon traits, and I was like, wow, that I could see that because Anthony's a big Morrowind guy. Like Elder Scrolls Morrowind is like his favorite thing, and I remember he's the one that actually introduced me to the game to that franchise. And just seeing the paths of AI going about their lives, he wanted to give more meaning to what they do every day and to purposely, or because their goals intersect with yours, they could screw you up and get the thing before you get the thing, no matter what.
No, so absolutely. I'm sorry for me talking over you, but like,
no, it's great.
I think it's a strong concept still. The idea was like, what my elevator pitch was, what if a game could invent itself? And the thought was, well, if all the characters had their own agendas and it wasn't just a list of tasks that you checked off, that you could have an RPG that evolved with what you were doing and what the characters were doing, and it needed a fairly sophisticated AI, which I wasn't sophisticated enough to know what was really going on. in AI because, you know, now we have, I mean, that's the embarrassing part. But it, but design wise, it was strong in concept. But in the end, what I had was a fake Toon Link moving around the terrain.
Oh, that visual made it so much better.
And that was it. But
I love it so much.
If you're a developer and you're just starting out, those are really big wins in some ways. Because you know all the stuff it took to get to that point and what is going on under the hood, but that thing was going nowhere fast. So I'm actually trying to build more infrastructure. So when I build more small games like this, my ultimate goal is to have all of these features so that as I go larger and larger and larger, I have a framework that I could keep pulling from. And so that's why, you know, finally I did the wise thing and said, well, you know, it kind of circles back. I'm like, I play Tetris more than any other game. Why don't I build the thing that has like this high return on investment because it's so much smaller and it can work and I could go through the cycle. I mean, even small things like putting up a Steam page and going through all that, you know, BS, you know, it's good to go through that because, you know, so that, okay, now I know what to expect for the next one and the next one and that sort of thing. So, you're not growing unless you could look back 20 years ago and think, man, what a stupid, naive idiot I was.
Yeah, it was definitely one of those moments where I realized, like, you know, this shit is A, it's above my understanding of what goes into it. And obviously the last 6-7 years that we've been doing this podcast, I have been, the curtain has been peeled back more than it ever has, and I understand a lot more than I did.
Way too much.
Yeah,
way,
like, too much. Like we get it now. Like, we understand, like, we understand that the smallest thing could get you not certified to go on, you know, Nintendo or whatever. Like, we get it. Like, there's tiny things that could just go completely wrong. But
I'll say this too about games, that, and what's interesting about, like, so the games, and when in my experience, you go through a development where it's not working yet, it's not fun yet, you got it, and then it crosses a threshold,
right?
And you kind of, there's some downhill sledding from there, and, you know, because it's like you have something and then something clicks that finishes it. This game, Jolty, was the fastest to that point for me on any game, and it's no surprise. I mean, to develop, you know, design wise it's not that complex, but it was like day two, okay, now it's like the game's fun, now I get to just have fun, like, adding U2 stages and BS. So that there is this, like, you know, this moment where there's all this underlying stuff that, and it's a complete mess until it's like that one piece that fits into the puzzle, and it's like, oh, all right, now it's kind of fun. Now I could give it to other people and they might enjoy it without me apologizing for everything. So that's, and I think every game that I've ever been on, whether it's a side project or professionally, that has that experience, if you're lucky.
You know, this is the first time I'm looking at your Steam page.
Oh, I didn't put it up until today. Like,
in terms, shit, there's an actual page now?
There's an actual page
now. Holy shit.
This makes it very real, man. This is great. Was I the first to wishlist the game in the world?
If this game becomes something, we could put that as a trivia question.
Hell yeah! I like that idea. But listen, you know, all things aside, like, you got a really, really good situation here with Jolty, and knowing where you started, at least, you know, early on in your career, to all of the trials, tribulations, the personal stuff you've gone through, the just everything from top to bottom, I am immensely proud that you had, like, seeing this Steam page here is like, I don't know, it's like my kid graduating. You know, it's like,
yeah, I'm not your kid though, because you're younger than me, for one.
Yeah, but you know, you can, I could always marry somebody that has a kid already that is older.
I'm an,
you know,
adopted child. Well, thank you.
You know what I mean? But no, I mean, like, you know, it's, we've had our issue. I don't know, man. Like, I've been rooting for you to do something that you've wanted to do, because for whatever reasons throughout your career, there have been things that, like, you know, sandbag a project, or, you know, relationships fall through with people you were collaborating with, and like all this stuff. And it was like, man, he just needs to, like, do something, get it done, so that he can just say he did it. And like, that will be like the Band-Aid and like the confidence boost that, you know, would start really kickstart your career as an independent developer. And, you know, seeing it now, looking at the, you know, this thing, just scroll through, which I'm going to put in the B-roll as well. I'm very proud of you.
On that note, like, a couple of things. So, you know, after the basketball game, I was kind of like, you know, maybe I should do other things. And I just want to say this out of gratitude to the people who deserve it. I got a chance to get to know two people who worked on NBA Jam through that. And they found out about some of the stuff that I did on that basketball game, which was actually to fight hard to get the voice of NBA Jam into that game. And Mark Turmel, the creator of Jam, said some things that was like, oh, if that guy has confidence in me to do it, it's like, okay, I could stick with it. It's like a comedian, and, you know, Dave Chappelle or Jerry Seinfeld says, oh, I think you could do this. So, you know, that was really, really cool. So I can't thank him enough. And, you know, all our kidding aside with our banter, Steve, I appreciate that when you saw this game, you believed in it. I won't make too big of a thing out of it, like, because for me, it's just like, you know, because who knows what happens with this? You know, it's game. There's so many games, but at least at minimum, it's like, yeah, you know, if someone's like, what did you work on? I think that's a fun game. Enjoy that. And that's really mostly where I'm at. And then hopefully it allows me to continue to build some other things that are more ambitious in the future. But it may turn out that that's the best thing I ever make. You know, we'll see. But from that standpoint, I think that's what's cool for me. Just, hey, here you go, play this. Because that's the other thing. Like, you end up in a career, and you guys know this, like, you don't always get to choose what you work on and what you do and all these other things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's this is like a thing where it's like, all right, I have total control.
Absolutely. I'm gonna say, given what I've seen in this game and the way your brain works, Anthony, this is going to be the first in a series of great stuff to come out of you.
I appreciate it. It's very kind. I have a lot of gratitude. You know, it's kind of you guys to say it. So we'll see. I think, what do you guys think of this? I think this really needs to end up on like a mobile console. I think that's kind of the sweet spot.
You got
to
get this bad boy Steam Deck verified.
Yeah, and that's cool. Yeah. That's cool. I think like a Switch type.
Switch,
of
absolutely.
Thing.
Yep.
Switch too. But you know, as a fan of games like Tetris, there aren't a lot of Tetrises out there. So I hope that, you know, and I think there are mobile versions of this too that will work. But I'm just rambling now. You know, we'll see.
Welcome to the Dual Screens podcast.
Some touch controls in there, you'd be fine.
Yeah, yeah. You do a little waggle.
You just waggle the phone.
No, I have some things in my head. They'll work. The big one, what I really want to do is I definitely want to get competitive two-player. I have versions of that. I'd love to do like tournament stuff. I have things in mind for that, because, you know, again, I watch a lot of competitive Tetris. You could edit my rambling out, right?
There will be no editing.
There's no rambling.
That's the thing about the Dual Screens podcast, man. It is unedited, raw interviews with the people who make the games we love, period. That's what the show is.
Nice.
Now, we are going to get into the rapid fire section of the show. Okay. Now, this is where we get to know you, Anthony. Super Anthony.
All the issues that we had, right?
Now... Now, here's the thing. I'm going to try and know things that I don't already know.
Okay.
That's okay. Cool. That's how I'm going to approach this. Andy has carte blanche. Who knows? Like, Andy's, you know, he could do whatever at this point. So Andy, I want you to start us off with rapid fire, because I want to see where your brain goes initially for this.
I'm a little torn.
Okay.
Like, do I want to ask about him or ask about what he knows about you?
That is interesting.
So I think that's an opportunity. I think Andy should ask me what I know about Steve, Steve should ask me what he doesn't know about me. It's the only time you're going to be able to do that.
Correct. Anthony, what is the dumbest thing you've seen Steven ever do?
I don't want to say that here. I really don't. But it lasted for like 4 years.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Oh, wait. I kind of know where that's going. I can read the room.
All right. On a scale of one,
that was the issue that you referred to.
Yeah. On a scale of one to nightmare, where do you think she ranks?
I think that I got to touch base with her a couple of times years later, and I think that you were two very different people.
That I love this answer.
Things with their lives, and I was immature in that period, and as I think I've matured, I wish her nothing but the best.
Sure. Go ahead, Andy.
I love how the answer was like, maybe she's listening.
No, it really wasn't. But it's like,
oh, I know. I'm just saying it was like a very, you know,
ex drove me nuts. And I wish her nothing but the best. And I'm sure I at times was way too immature about it myself.
I hope she has the life she deserves.
Yes, that is the best way to say it, Andy. Thank you. Anyway, go ahead, Andy.
All right, this is more of an Anthony question. Anthony, because you work in game design with, you know, THQ and other folks. What is your dream collaboration? If you could pick a studio to work with on any project, or just be a fly on the wall or contribute, who would you pick? What comes to mind immediately?
So one of the reasons I want to do what I want to do is that my goal in life is not to just be like a scrappy indie game developer. And I don't say that negatively, but I've seen things culturally that I don't like. And so my dream is to build a company with the proper culture where there's nobody is there for just themselves and their personal, you know, ambitions in terms of we're just there because we love what we do and we're going to work really closely together and make this awesome thing together. And you know, so smart, creative people who are hardworking, get them closely together, removing as much of the BS as you can. That's ultimately what I'd like to do. And then that also, hopefully that becomes an opportunity where as I get older, I mentor other people and they're growing. I'm very inspired. I know this is rapid fire. I'm very inspired by something Vince Lombardi said, where he said he wasn't coaching football.
That's a sports person, Andy.
I know the name.
Okay.
He was coaching men. And so I do
football,
hope.
Football, right?
Yes.
Okay. Got to make sure I was
right. I know there's a huge overlap of gamers.
I wasn't sure.
But, yeah, I hope that what I do is also build something where people grow as people. That's something I think about a lot more now in life, helping others maximize their potential.
He gave us a whole mission statement for his company.
Well, I like it.
It's on my mind all the time.
He read the About Us page in his brain.
And I'm so sorry because I think about this all the time. I hope that I'm making games too that elevate the medium in terms of being games that are not just entertainment, though I appreciate entertainment, but like provide purpose, provide meaning, provide insights. I don't think we've quite gone there yet, and I, you know, and there are opportunities for that still.
Absolutely. All right. So you've been near the Boston area for quite a bit now. And which whose food is better, New York or
Oh
Boston?
shit.
Oh, look, I'm so happy to be out of New York, but not because of food. Just very clear
Is the
about
right
that.
answer.
And you know, you have to go to South Brooklyn to get a decent pizza or a bagel, period, end of story. But I, you know, I moved up here because it is a lot cleaner. And but yeah, no, food wise, it's definitely New York, though I found some places that I'm okay with.
And
Yeah.
you're a picky eater, so
I'm a picky
that's
eater,
important.
and I love being in Boston. Sorry, New York. I'm the biggest New York Giants fan in the world, but I had a. I mean, we lived in the same block. There are way somewhere along the lines. All right, I'm going to get into
Oh, here
something.
we go.
Somewhere along the lines, we grew up near 18th Avenue, Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, right? And you go up the block, and there used to be garbage pails on every corner. And the streets were relatively clean. Now, somewhere along the line, some mayor or someone walked, looked at this and said, "Yeah, these garbage pails, no, they gotta go." Like someone consciously made that decision. So there's bags of garbage like all up and down the block. And these are small things, and the smell of marijuana everywhere. I'm sorry if if you use that stuff and you're listening, but it just got to a point where I was just like, yeah, I'm done with this. I'm out. I want to be in a place where the streets are clean. I don't eat carbs so much anymore. So, you know, pizza and bagels, you could stay in Brooklyn. I like being here right now in Boston.
How often do you come down to New York, or do you
I
ever?
will never, ever again. Just sit in a New York City subway station.
Oh, Lord.
Just sit there stuck over the Brooklyn Bridge for an hour and a
Anthony.
half, or Manhattan
Where
Bridge.
else
Just
can you
sit
go to
there.
see a homeless person fuck a garbage can?
Yeah, I mean, the moment I was visiting Boston, I came back, the moment I stepped foot, and there was a man just throwing beer bottles on 34th Street. And I was like, oh, right back home. And all of a sudden, the joy just, oh, misery just came over me again. The moment I stepped foot, I was like, yeah, I'm out.
Yeah, the city has done things to
This
my soul.
irreparable harm. This might not be as a rapid fire response, but I'm kind of cool with it. I'm not sure. It's kind of topical too with the news cycle recently. If you've seen the Unity shenanigans as of late,
A little bit,
Anthony.
a little bit.
Okay, so for those who don't know, I believe I kind of touched briefly on this afternoon. They're doing this thing where they're going to be charging developers a fee for each time a game is, I guess, booted up or loaded. Is that
So
right, Steve?
I'll provide that little
Am I saying that
downloaded,
properly?
downloaded.
Or a download? Okay, so it's like a download fee.
Forgive me.
Okay.
Because I want to double check. I was like, something seems right, something doesn't seem right. So it's installs for anyone who, over the course of a year, got over 200,000 installs and made at least $200,000 in, I don't know if it's in profit or in gross, but those two things have to be the case.
Oh, so there are some caveats to like
There are
when it
some
actually
caveats.
kicks in. Okay.
So if you're just an indie developer and you've got a game out there and you're not selling anything, you're not going to get a $100,000 bill from Unity, as far as I can tell. So it should just, not that this means that this is necessarily a good business practice, but it might not be as dramatic as it seems to a lot of people. The thing about Unity right now, and I want to be careful because it's still my field, and I, you know, but it from an outside looking in, it seems like they don't have a clear vision of what they want to do right now. And it seems like, and that, and I'll see the positive. It gives me an opportunity to convert some of my code base to Unreal,
There it is.
and give me, But Unity still has a place. It's if you're gonna do a mobile game, it's one of the best places to do a mobile game still, as far as I can tell. But yeah, so there's the freak out version of it, and you know, I still have a lot of gratitude. I'll say this. I mean, Steve saw what I did pre-Unity, and it looked ridiculous. And Unity opened up so much of the world for me. It opened up so much of what was possible. It forced companies, you know, it forced Unreal to be in the hands of people who weren't AAA developers. My first Unity project was doing a first-person Super Mario Brothers shooter, which was cute. And it was the first time I could just easily, just like without like writing my own render engine, piece stuff together. So I still have a lot of gratitude for Unity, and hopefully they get some clarity on their vision and what they want to do and where they want to go.
Just figure out what your business model is, and you know, maybe don't retroactively charge people that didn't
The
agree to
scary
that.
reports are.
Oh, is that it also? Was it a retroactive thing as well? I did not catch that bit.
Yes,
That is
that.
fucked.
Yeah.
If that's the case.
The scary report, and I don't know how
Holy
much
shit.
corroborate this is, that like supposedly everyone on the inside is like selling their stock or something, and that's where you just go,
Ooh, I
that's
should check the ticker
insane.
symbol. I'm like intrigued.
Uh-oh.
What's the aftermarket gonna look like today?
Oh, Andy, you and your markets.
They might get a lot of so much pushback that they're just
Oh,
gonna
they're already down $2
something.
today. That's something.
Anthony,
What's up?
what's the best Rocky movie?
Oh, come on. Are you really asking this question?
I am, and I want you to include the Creed movies.
God, if he
I
says
want
like
you to, you know
Rocky,
what?
why did you say Rocky Five?
Rank the Rocky movies.
That's a better
Okay,
question.
that I
That's
can do.
a better question.
Listen, here's the deal. And if you want a short answer, don't ask me this question. So we're running long. Okay, here's the deal with Rocky. First of all, there's Rocky One, and then there's everything else. And I'm not talking about Rocky movies. I'm talking about movies, period. Okay?
There's
Rocky
Rocky
original.
and then all of cinema.
Well, and the only thing that comes
Entire
close.
body of
Yes.
cinematography.
Yes. The only maybe number two is The Room, for very different reasons. But for me, Rocky is it laps the field in terms of my favorite movies of all time. It's not particularly close. So that's there. Okay, let me go through the films. From a pure film standpoint, the second best one, in my opinion, should be Rocky II. However, Rocky II is kind of boring and it does nothing. And
Correct.
it theoretically should be better than three. And on their own, it should be better than three. But lately, I've come around. I think Rocky III is the next best one. I'm not going to rank Creed because I only saw it once and I liked it. It's somewhere in that range. So I'm going Rocky one. I'm going to go in a surprise twist for me, Rocky three, because
Mr.
I do
T,
like
yeah.
dramatic turn in between. Okay. Then I'll go Rocky two. It's safe. It's boring. It's fine. Now this gets tricky. Because Rocky IV is a bad movie, I'm sorry. And then I tried to watch the director's cut that came out recently, and it's even worse. It's
Well,
better with
Rocky IV is a propaganda piece through and through. That's all
The AI robot is better. So if you just want
it
pure entertainment, so am I going for pure entertainment or am I going for a good movie? You know what? I'll put Rocky IV above Rocky Balboa. Rocky Balboa is technically a better movie. But again, it's kind of like Rocky II. It doesn't need to be there. It doesn't move anything when you really think of it in the grand scheme of things. It's just another, no. So I'm gonna put four. And then I'll put Rocky Balboa, and I'll put five as easy to put at the bottom. But five has a lot more potential than any of those other movies. And had that been edited properly, it could have been right up there.
Yeah, if they didn't go in a time machine between four and five, it that whole movie would have been much better set up. But
I
yeah,
think
there's all kinds of stuff.
Like, I would just swap the 2 and 4 spot with Anthony's list because I have a really soft spot for Rocky IV. It was always on TV. It was always on TV growing up, and the infamous "I will break you" line from Drago is just, it just shatters all of.
Can I tell you what I think would have been a great movie? Because I just watched Rocky versus Drago, and so they gave Drago more lines, which was good because it made Drago interesting. The problem is, I'm rooting for Drago in that movie. He's the only sympathetic character in that version of it to me. I don't know why I'm rooting for Rocky. I don't know why I'm rooting for anyone else. But Drago has an interesting story. And if they did that movie, here's a guy who's being controlled by these people and he's trying to be his own man. That's a great movie.
That all the way that the original movie was edited, that all happens after the third round of the fight.
Right.
Like his entire character change happens after the third round. It's like, but he's the bad guy. Oh wait, no, and not really. He doesn't.
No,
like
he's a victim. He's forced to take drugs and steroids and he's a machine and he's the victim of circumstance.
But really watch both cuts of Rocky IV. And it's like the original movie, there's really something at stake for Rocky. I could break down. I mean, that last fight scene is so beautiful in every way, but you could break that down. And I won't. I'll spare you that. But there's a reason to root for Rocky. There's so much at stake. And it's an everyman kind of thing. Watch Rocky IV. None of these people are likable. None of them. Rocky's not particularly likable. Creed's not particularly likable. Adrian.
Paulie's terrible.
Paulie's Paulie. And it's like, it's these narcissists that are just going through life. And the only one who really had an interesting story, I think, was Drago. And you see that when they bring back some of the other footage. But I can't think of a reason I'm rooting for Rocky other than I watched another 3 Rocky films. It's like, right. Hey, look, I'm Rocky. Of course you're watching me. You know, I'm American. You know, he's a Russian. But, you know, we could all get together. We could be together. Here's one thing I learned, by the way. Steve purchased for me 2 Rocky Balboa action figures. And I will say this, Rocky Balboa action figures are never not funny. If you pull out Rocky Balboa action figures for people in any context, they're always funny in some way. But
I gotta test this theory.
Well, Anthony, if I could change and you could change, everybody can change.
Everybody, this whole place could change, you know?
All right.
I think that's gonna do it, Steve.
But I have to share one small anecdote before we leave.
Love it.
Our shared love of Rocky Balboa, specifically the Rocky Balboa portion of Sylvester Stallone's brain, goes so deep that at one point Anthony had me actually recording him dressed up as Rocky doing what he called an interview show, which he called the Sylvester Stallone show.
Do you have this still?
I have no idea.
Mother fuck.
Better.
I don't even know where that would live, because my YouTube channel that all that stuff was on was taken down for some reason. I have no access to it.
The heartbreak.
Don't you remember, Andy, when I was like, when you worked at YouTube and I was like, where did my channel go? And you were like looking into it for me and it just like,
yeah,
fucking,
and I was like,
that was
all
one of the videos up there.
Went.
Yeah, that was one of those things. Anyway, Anthony.
But conceptually, the conceit of that was Sylvester Stallone couldn't get any guests, so he interviewed himself. which I was quite fond of, and then
what a concept
fell on my head, which turns out to be the best moment of that video. So
that was a long night. Anyway, Anthony, thank you so much for joining us.
This has been a blast, you guys.
Yeah, it's good times.
No, I mean this with sincerity. Thank you both. You know, I'm a nobody, so I appreciate that you guys would.
Oh, stop it
for now. For now,
you're
but you got something left in the basement.
I can't wait for the day for you to ignore our emails when you're making your money.
I can't wait for the day you guys fund this, and I can't ignore those emails. So, all right, guys,
Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Anthony. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, viewers. And as always, please be excellent to each other.